To win more customers in the age of AI, you have to be willing to do four things, according to Marcus Sheridan. You have to be willing to talk about the things that others aren't willing to talk about in your space. You have to be willing to show things that others aren't willing to show in your space. You have to be willing to sell in ways that others aren't willing to sell. And you have to be willing to be more human than others are willing to be in your space. That, my friends, in a nutshell, is the key takeaway from the Impact Live conference that just happened in Chicago. In this episode, I will be sharing with you tons of tips of how to fulfill those four mantras. Off we go. Welcome to Trust Builders, the podcast where we have transformative conversations with company leaders as well as sales and marketing managers about growing your business by educating your customers and building trust. My name is Hannah Eisenberg, and I am your host. Welcome to Trust Builders. Today, I have a very special episode for you. I'm going to be doing this one solo because I want to give you a quick update on the Impact Live conference that happened last week in Chicago. There's so much to learn, so much to take away, and so many ideas. And today, I want to take the opportunity just to share a few of those, because it's so important to keep up to date with all the things and the latest thinking in the industry. So what is Impact Live? Impact Live is a smaller marketing and sales conference put on by the team at Impact. It's 250 of the smartest and brightest people in marketing and sales, and we come together for about 3 days every year and talk about what is new in building trust. So if you are wondering, how do I win more customers, or how do I win an endless stream of customers in the age of AI, stay with me because this is your episode. This will be a super quick freight train run through of all the key insights and lessons learned of Impact Live. Are you ready? All right, let's get to it. All right, so the first one is cost and price. How much are you talking on your website about cost and price? You might already be putting on how much something costs, and that's phenomenal. But to really explain cost and price to your buyers, you have to explain what makes the cost of your product or service go up and what makes it go down. Meaning, are there any options or configurations or ways to save money that make it go up or down? Okay. And then you have to explain, why are some people in your industry expensive and what does that look like? And why are some in your industry so cheap? And then how do you fit in that? How are you more on the expensive side, or are you more an affordable option? And here's how you make that affordable without a trade-off in functionality or quality. Because that is explaining value to the buyer. That explains how you fit into this value. Okay, so that's cost and price. Potential problems. We as buyers often are obsessed about what could be wrong because we're trying to avoid making a mistake by buying something or deciding to go with a certain vendor. So by us as a company addressing proactively what could possibly go wrong and then saying how we can fix it or how it's usually addressed, it alleviates that objection a lot of times because people say, oh yeah, I understand you bring your elephant out, you love your elephant, but it's a solvable elephant. Okay, so that's a potential problem. So as if the third one is comparison. So how do you compare against a specific vendor or a market category? So how does your product compare against the rest of the market, either against a competitor, a specific product or function or vendor, or against a category of products? Now, the last two are often put together. There's a review and best of. So people really want to know, what is the best that I can possibly, that money can buy? And how close can I get, even if I can't afford the best, how close can I get with your solution to being the best? but it helps them to define value. It helps them to define what the scope of functionality is that is out there. And then reviews, like show people customer reviews, customer journeys, explain to them in words or even better in videos, the journey that your customers have gone through, the problems that they have encountered, how you solved the problem, and now how do they feel about it? And what the success looks like. And then there's two bonus categories. They are what is something, what is this market category, what is a digital platform conductor, or what is, etc. How do you do this thing? How do you solve this process challenge? How do you use AI to reduce agent churn in a contact center? Now, the Big Five is an amazing framework of giving you content ideas. You can do this for every product or service category, and you should at least, as a baseline, have three of each in each of those categories. Okay, now, how do you use AI to get faster to creating an article? Impact was showing a really cool prompting framework that is very simple but highly effective, especially in writing Big Five articles. Now, again, you have to have the human component. You can't just take something that AI wrote and publish it out there and hope for the best. It's never a good idea, but it can get you in editing or in writing or in ideation so much faster on your way. All right, so to the prompting framework. First, you're going to tell your AI, if it's ChatGPT or something else, what role you're expecting it to play. So you assign a role. I want you to be an experienced content marketer with special experience in X. Okay? If you are using it to brainstorm your Big Five articles, tell it that it has experience in Marcus Sheridan's They Ask You Answer Big Five framework, and then you go on to fill in the gaps. So step number two, fill in the gaps. Give it additional information that it needs in order to really fulfill your quest. I am a roofing company specialized in these kind of roofings, and I want whatever it is that it needs to really have the context. And you can save those prompts or you can save those snippets so you can reuse them and not have to rewrite them all the time. Then give it examples. Say what good looks like. If you're asking it, I want you to create 15 Big Five articles in this industry, then show some examples of what a good Big Five article looks like. And there's plenty of examples out there. If you can't find anything, let me know and I'll send you some examples. Then you add a style. So tell ChatGPT or your AI, write this at a 12th grade reading level. I want you to bullet point the list. Or give me the idea of the blog title and explain why you made that choice. Tell it exactly what kind of format and style you want this to be written in. And then last but not least, format your instructions clearly. If you're being super clear in your instructions, the result will be tremendously better. All right. Now, we talked a lot about articles, but the Big Five really are not just a framework for writing content. They're also a phenomenal framework for creating video. And a lot of times you will have to create an article and a video at the same time and have them go and live together. Because some people just like to consume video more than reading, and others like to read more than they to consume video. By the way, with HubSpot's new AI function, you can now very easily generate in seconds, it's quite astonishing, a post narration as well. So they can just listen to it as well. Now, I want to dive a little bit deeper into video, because one of the big segments of the conference was actually not on Big Five or writing articles. We really didn't talk about articles or blog writing that much. We spoke a lot about video. And there's this phenomenal framework called the Selling Seven. And I want to quickly take a minute to go through that because it is such a great framework for creating videos that help you sell better and it help you market better and more effective. And more importantly, they help you become the most human brand out there. As you might have guessed, the Selling Seven includes seven types of videos that you should have on your website. The first one is the 80% video. If you were to go to your sales team right now and you ask them, hey sales team, how many questions that you answer on an everyday basis are repetitive? Most sales teams that I worked with say about 70 to 80%. Imagine having to answer the same questions over and over, and that's 80% of the questions you answer. Now, the 80% video will take your top questions and answer them in a very approachable video-based fashion. So you can send that video already to a prospect before you have your demo and say, hey, I want you to watch this video because that will answer your top questions that people usually at this stage have. And then we free up more time in our discussion to focus on the real unique problems that you have and that you're looking to solve. It's awesome. It helps to build relationships. It helps to really speed up the sales process tremendously. But obviously, it can also live on your website. Now, the second one is probably the one, if you haven't done any Selling Seven videos, that I would start with if I was you. This is the bio video. And a bio video is really something that you can produce very quickly, and every customer-facing person in your organization should have one. And it's really about getting to know the person on a more personal, human level. So in the video, you are going to talk about the things that make them get up in the morning. Why do you love your job so much? What excites you about your job? And then a little bit about them privately. It doesn't have to be any secrets revealing, but hey, I live in so-and-so, I have two kids and a dog and I love to hike. Just be human. Just be approachable. And add that to your team page. So the bio page, it should have the bio video, but also your signature. What a great way of humanizing your brand than having a bio video and being immediately so approachable. How awesome is that? Now, the next Selling Seven video is another amazing and super helpful for selling. It's the customer journey video. So as I said before, if you have a great customer story to tell, make a video. There's nothing that makes people feel, and that's really what you don't want to do. You want your prospects to watch this video and feel the pain that your customers went through. And then the joy as they solve their issue and they are sitting now telling their story and really experienced that joy again, that what they felt when they had solved that problem. There's nothing more that is able to transport that. You can't describe it in an article as good as you can show it in a video. So that one is a really important video to do. Now, another video is Claims We Make. Claims We Make is tremendously important because we make a lot of claims on our website. But who actually backs them up? How do we back them up? We say a lot of things of how great we are on the website, but the Claims We Make video shows people, like physically shows them, why these things happen. I saw the other day a video of a wall from a prefab house structure, and they had it under stress test, and the whole concrete wall snapped back and forth and back into place. You cannot describe that. You have to see it with your own eyes. Phenomenal. All right, so that is the Claims We Make video. And then, of course, one that I already mentioned, the cost and price video. On your pricing page, you should have someone from your company, a salesperson, the sales manager, your CEO, whoever it is, walk people through those five questions I mentioned before. What makes the price go up? What makes the price go down? Why are options expensive? Why are options cheap? And where are you at? And then explain your pricing. Talk them through. Do you have tiers? Do you have options? Why do you use these options? Okay, so that's the cost and price video, because that helps us to explain what value looks like. Now, last but not least, we have the product and service fit video. There's nothing that is more attractive or makes people pay attention more than when you tell them that you're potentially not a fit for them, and here is why. For example, for me, I'm a business coach, and people who are looking for a marketing agency and have someone come in and do the marketing for them are not a great fit. E-commerce companies that sell a lot of smaller items on e-commerce, not a great fit. And in that video, I can explain why I'm not a good fit for them. Actually, there was one more. I miscounted. There is one more in the Selling 7, and that is landing page videos. Landing page videos are super essential because you have someone trustworthy explain to a visitor who is considering to fill out your landing page what exactly happens when you fill out that form on that landing page. Because they have so many fears. Am I going to get spammed? Is someone going to call me? Am I going to be flooded with emails that I don't want? If you explain to them exactly what the next step looks like, what they're going to get when they are filling out that form, and take away those fears, landing page videos have a realistic chance of increasing your conversion rate by 80%. All right, another really important video trend is vertical video. 90% of people actually use YouTube to discover new brands and new people. Shout out to Dan Loves Pasta. My daughter loves you and she wants to buy your book. As soon as we can get our hands on it in Europe, we will. But it works, right? And 70% of the traffic of YouTube videos is mobile. So vertical video is super, super important, and it cannot be overstated how critical it is, even if you're not a video person, to get on board with this trend and how important it is to really start making those videos. Okay? I'm not a TikTok person. I've never gotten on that bandwagon, but it is really important to do vertical video. Now, Impact shared a few really cool tips on how to get started with vertical videos, and I would love to share them with you as well. And they're calling them the Sticky Five. What you want to achieve with vertical video is you want 80% retention rate is really good, but what you really want to go for is plus 100% view rate. So how do you do vertical video really well? Here are five quick tips I learned. First, you need to have a great hook. So that means in the first 2 to 3 seconds, you have to pull your audience in with an intriguing question or a statement. Second, every 3 seconds, you want to change perspective or a visual, like a B-roll, to keep your viewers' attention. Number three, about midway of the video, you really want to make sure that you're hinting towards the progress and that you are having a payoff come very soon. Now, you need to have payoff at the end of the video. So that's your climax, that's your key takeaway from your video that people want to have. And as soon as you deliver it, rule number five, quit while you're ahead. Stop right there, period. All right, so that is your vertical video. That concludes our content section. Now let's have a look at the website section. despite having preached that the website is the best salesperson, it never sleeps, you don't have to pay it, etc., there's still so many websites out there that really are missing the mark. One thing you can do right now to see how effective your website is, head over to your website right now and do a blink test. So close your eyes and you open them, and in 3 to 5 seconds, I want you to look at the hero section of your website and see if you can determine what you do and how you improve the life of your buyer right now. If you can't, you're leaving money on the table. Because here's the thing. Guess what? The reason why most sales are failing is not because of bad salespeople or a lack of function. It's because of indecision. A confused buyer doesn't buy. We are so scared as buyers to make mistakes. We are feeling distrust as a default. So if you are confusing the slightest, people are not going to buy and you're leaving money on the table. So I really encourage you, do that blink test right now. All right, so the next thing I want you to look at is how much are you talking about cost and price? I know I talked about cost and price a lot today, but go actually have a look. Is your pricing page in the top navigation bar? Is it easy to find? Does it say pricing? Does it explain pricing? Again, what makes the cost go up, what makes it go down, etc. And if you're saying that request a quote is your pricing tab, Marcus Sheridan had some strong words. He said, request a quote is literally the middle finger of the internet. Why is that? Because if you think about it, if you put yourself in your buyer's shoes and you come to a website and you want to know, is it worth for me to spend time investigating this vendor because they look interesting, they look like they could solve my problem, but I want to know if I can afford it. But you say request a quote, I'm really not going to fill out this request a quote at this stage. I don't want to talk to a salesperson. I just want to know what it costs. And I know that how much your products cost. So if I know that how much your products cost, I know that you're not telling this to me. You're not sharing that information with me. You're making it hard for me as a buyer to buy that. Hence, you're hiding this from me, which makes me distrust you. Middle finger of the internet. Don't have a request your quote unless it goes hand in hand with a really good value, a really good pricing page explaining all these things I mentioned before. And then you can request a quote because it's such detailed pricing. Although I'm going to talk about self-service tools in a second because that is much more preferable. All right. Number three, things that you should do on your website right now. Go to your website on your homepage and count the amount of times you say us and ours versus you and yours. You should be saying you and yours, talking about your buyer and making them the hero of the story 80% of the time, while talking about what you achieve and your function and your credibility should be 20% of the time. Most people have that reversed. So I encourage you to count that and really sit down and see what can you do to make your buyer the hero of the journey rather than bragging about your company. Okay, so those are three things you can do right now. Things long-term that really help you position yourself as the best teacher and create more trust with your buyers using your website is to create a learning center. Now you might say, oh, I have a learning center, it's called my blog. Your blog really, if you are continuously updating it, it's great, but it has things in a chronological order. And if you have hundreds of posts, it can be extremely hard to find the ones that are most valuable in a buyer's journey. So the Learning Center really is a hub of your most valuable educational resources. It needs to be searchable. It needs to be segmentable. So segmentable means by the type of topic, by the role that the person is having, and it needs to have the type of content. And then it needs to be easy to use and in the top navigation. So we already said pricing, and now the learning center needs to be in the top of your navigation. All right, it also needs to be designed, and that's really a reminder, with your buyer in mind. There are so many people who use technical jargon in their learning center that your buyer isn't familiar with, and they're really literally here to learn more about this thing, but they can't because it's inaccessible, because they can't find what they need to find because you're not using the terminology that they are using. Okay, now moving on to self-service tools. Self-service tools are incredibly important with our modern buyer because 75% of buyers prefer a seller-free experience. So that's a new statistic from Gartner. In 2020, they said that 33% of buyers want a buyer-free experience. Now it's 75%. That doesn't mean salespeople are going to go away. But it means that through AI, through all the content out there, it's so much easier to get access to all the information. And we as humans, feeling trusting and impatient, and we want to just get things faster, we don't want to wait to talk to a salesperson. We want to do most of the research by ourselves. So by doing that, we might have a lot of questions that we get answered. But then the last few questions that we are not sure about, or we're looking for a trusted advisor, that's when we ask the salesperson to come in. And that whole thing shifted, and we really need to get on board with the shift, that a salesperson isn't influencing 90% of the buyer's journey, 50% of the buyer's journey. It's really only the last 20%. Whatever we can do to help our buyers do the online research beforehand increases our chances for them to actually give us a call. So here's where self-service tools are so important. And there's four main categories of self-service tools. There's the self-selection tool. So really help someone make the right choice for them. So it could be something like a quiz that says, what is the best for me? Impact showed some cool examples of what is the way you can build your own copy versus printer machine for office environments. What is the best mop for clean rooms? There were some really cool tools that people had built. Then there's a self-assessment. The self-assessment has a bit of a different feel than a self-selection tool because it usually involves scores or metrics. Then we have a self-pricing tool. So this is your classical pricing calculator. And you really want to, if your pricing is it depends or it's a little bit more complicated, a pricing calculator can really help for people to understand the options that are available to them and get a ballpark idea, or in some cases, a really clear picture of what costs they're going to be running into. Now, this might not end every single time with a buy now button, but it helps to get them an idea. And that's super, super critical. And number four is a self-scheduling tool. This can be as straightforward as a Calendly or a HubSpot meetings embed, where you can pick a time in a salesperson's calendar. Or it could be as complicated as, here are our available sales agents, who do you want to talk to, including a picture and a bio video, and you as a buyer get to pick who you want to talk to. Can be as easy or as complex as you need it to be to really help your buyer make the best decision for them. Now, we talked a lot about marketing activities that are supporting sales activities. Right. And if you've learned about the Ask Your Answer before, that a lot of people mistake it for a content marketing initiative, while in reality, it is actually a sales first initiative that is marketing powered. Now, let's talk right sales activities. Now, everyone has in the recent 6 months, I don't know if you noticed, there's a lot of sales experts finally getting on the board of saying, we need to be educating our buyer. Yeah, no kidding. So that definitely is starting to become a trend. Okay, so now it is even more important, rather than sending thousands of cold prospecting emails, to really have a goal of building fewer but much more personalized one-on-one relationships with people. Now, this is becoming harder and harder. If you think about it, 18% is the open rate of a one-on-one email between a salesperson and a prospect. That is astounding. If I've already emailed with this person and now 1 out of 5 times that person is going to open my email, that is scary. So we need to learn how to not only write better email subject lines, because obviously that's an issue there, but we need to learn how to provide real value. And one way of how to provide real value as a salesperson is assignment selling. Now, assignment selling is a way to use content, video, or articles proactively, and even self-service tools, proactively in a sales process with the goal of educating your buyer, shortening your sales cycle, and increasing close rates. This could be anything from sending a one-on-one video, confirming the call, telling them what the expectation is, and telling them how the call is going to go and what the next step is going to be before the first call even happens. This way, your prospect has seen you, they have seen your facial expressions, they feel like they met you, and they connect a person with that email. The likelihood of them turning up is much, much higher. Now, let's say your first meeting goes really well. And you are going to, let's say we have a sales process where there's the first meeting is like 20 minutes. It's just to really get a closer feel for what are the issues that person is trying to solve and if we are even like remotely a fit. The second call could be something like really assessing the needs and the problems that the person has. Now, at the end of the first call, I could say something like, hey, so as the next step, we're going to have a call to really assess your needs and problems. To help you do that, I'm going to be sending you a self-assessment tool. It's really important that you fill this out before our next call because it helps you to understand, et cetera, et cetera. You explain why they need to do that. It depends on your industry and what you're actually sending them. But you in the call, in that first call, before you finish, you make the next call, and you tell them what the next step is. So no more, oh, if you have any questions, let me know. And let me know about when we can meet next. No. In assignment selling, you are really showing them what the next step is, giving them some homework, and then having the next call. Okay, let's say the next call with the assessment went really well and you understood their problems and needs and the buyer really feels heard. Now you can send them, at the end of the call, a buyer's guide. Because the next meeting is really like about presenting a solution to that problem. Now the buyer's guide can be a longer PDF document that really explains what would it be like to work with you? What does your pricing look like? What is the first few months of the engagement look like? Really answering the biggest questions that buyers usually have. And if you require them to read that before, they will have much more time in the call, because they already answered all the generic questions, to tweak the solution, to really get to an agreement, to really feel heard. And that call goes tremendously better because they are more educated. Okay, so let's say that call went well, and now it's time to close. That's the next call. We can now send them an onboarding guide or a kickoff guide or whatever the next step is. But you see what I'm saying? There's a logical progression of things that we engage the buyer with proactively to educate them that is helpful on their journey, and it will tremendously speed up the sales process, and it will increase our close rates because our buyers are more educated. Now, before I want to close out for today, I want to just share with you four tips that will tremendously help you to increase your sales team performance. The first one is you really need to understand your sales process. Start with mapping your customer journey and then defining your sales process based on that, but document it and make everyone else in the sales organization and in your marketing organization understand what call comes in which order, what assignment selling pieces we're going to be sending out, when to add a marketing qualified lead versus a sales qualified lead in your CRM, all these things. It has to be documented. It has to be a standardized process. You need to understand what your sales process is like. That's number one. Number two is you need to know what your sales team is doing. That seems obvious, you say, but most sales teams I start to work with do not record their calls. And if they record them, they not watch them back. So you have to record your calls and you have to watch them back in order to get better, to be more effective. Now, as a consequence of watching your recorded sales calls, you will find that there's situations that you could have handled better or situations that went really well that you want to replicate into your other sales team members. You have to role play in order to do that. Now, a lot of people say, I understand the importance of role playing, but we don't really do it. You got to role play on a weekly basis to be a top sales team. Now, I'm not a sports person, but if the Yankees all of a sudden stop pitching practice, they would, there's no way they are a well-performing team. There's just no way that without those reps, without that practice, they're going to be world-class. Same for your sales team. Role-playing is your pitching practice. You must role-play every week. And fourth, you have to leverage AI in your sales. Whether that is to prepare your calls, to research your prospects before. There's great tools like Apollo or Crystal Knows, or there's so many great sales AI tools out there that help you prepare your call much better. But also you can use ChatGTP to write role-play scenarios. You can even role-play with ChatGTP if you don't have a role-play partner. Now, those four tips really tremendously help you to improve the quality of your sales team. So those were really the key takeaways in terms of content, your website, and doing the right sales activities. Over the next few months, I will be interviewing more people, and I'm so thrilled that you're part of this journey. And I want to just say thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting Trust Builders. And I really would love if you share some of the nuggets. What was your key takeaway from today? And what are you going to be implementing to get endless customers in the age of AI? I really hope this is a part of your journey and this is helpful. And remember, ultimately, everything comes down to trust. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. As always, I will put all the links and contact details of our guest in the show notes. And if you have any questions or you would like to be on the show, please email me at hannah@3pcreativegroup.com or reach out to me on LinkedIn under Hannah Eisenberg at 3P Creative Group. I will speak to you soon.